Hello, Podnutsians, and thank you for attending episode 94 of the Mini PC Show, Big Talk, Small Computers, and this episode is brought to you by Tim L., and thank you for your support, sir. How's it going, Dor?
I'll say normal crazy. We've hit like a really hard and heavy news cycle, which I will say is really, really, really bad if your name isn't Raspberry Pi, because they've just taken all of the attention away from every single board computer for, I don't know, a couple weeks, it seems like.
They sucked all the oxygen out of the room. Well, I think, one, I've really beaten up on the Pi team for a very long time for not having more than 1 gig of RAM. So I definitely have to applaud them. It sounds like a bit of a oopsie, how do you want to say it? They horked up the power control on the USB-C a little bit. So if you don't use a low-end cable, you're going to have a problem if you use a high-end cable. So, and for those of you that aren't aware of the situation, basically they used one resistor to pull up or down two wires on the USB-C when they should have used two separate resistors. Because if you use a certain cable, it has a chip in it, and it recognizes the Raspberry Pi as an audio device and will not power it. USB-C has some smarts in it, and it can deliver different amperage values and different voltage values. So it can deliver up to 20 volts in the case of a laptop. And I'm not sure what the max amp output is, but I know it can deliver up to 3 amps. So it's pretty high current, high voltage. And so the initial communication on the USB-C standard is done at 5 volts, and there's a handshake, and it identifies the device that it's plugged into, and then it determines how much volts, how much amps it's going to deliver.
Well, yeah, I'll say, I am very shocked. This is the kind of thing that they did not already know about ahead of time and test for. I'll say this. I've never seen a USB-C cable with an E on it before. So I don't know where these cables emanate from that have this issue. And anytime I hear something has smart in it, I just assume that means it's really stupid and they're just trying to make more money off of it.
Right. I don't know what cables I have. I've never looked for an E on the cables I have, but I've never noticed it either. So maybe I have all stupid USB-C cables.
Well, and it wouldn't shock me if the cables that are affected are actually like Mac cables or something, because that sounds right. like something they would do.
Yep. Yeah, it sounds kind of like what, because that's what has to happen on a Mac if you're powering with USB-C, because it's going to want 20 volts.
Gotcha. And I'll say this seems to be like one of the problems with USB. With each standard, USB 2, USB, I mean, USB, then USB 2, then USB 3, then USB Super Speed, then USB-C, and upcoming USB 4. There's too many varieties of the exact same thing. And this, I don't know if you remember, Rich, when the, I want to say it was the Google Pixel phone was one of the first phones to go to USB Type-C. And then a Google guy went on Amazon and bought all kinds of USB cables and found some insane high percentage, like 68-70% of the cables he bought actually were damaging his phone because the USB-C standard was so non-specific, I'll say.
Oh, wow. Well, probably the product line at the time was that way. And then if you go to the other way, like my wife and my daughter both have iPhones, and you get a dongle or something, like they only have that stupid, I don't even know what you call the port, but they only have that port and they don't have a headphone jack. So my wife was buying these cables on Amazon that were a Y cable, and all of a sudden firmware update comes out or software update comes out, and the ones that worked didn't work anymore. And then apparently they flopped on that after she threw them all out. She's like, it doesn't work, I'm throwing it away. And then like 2 weeks later they made them work again.
Gotcha. Honestly, I'm not going to lie and say I heard of that one before. But that's, you know, I do everything in my, I almost block everything Apple in every feed thing that I do, just because I really don't want to hear anything that they're doing because I just take for granted everything they do is just to suck more money out of people and to mess everybody up.
But wait a second, you're door-to-door geek. You went door-to-door helping people with geeky things. How can you not?
And if they had a Mac, I told them no. Go call somebody.
Because I have that happen. It's like my friends, they're like, hey, I got a problem with this. And I'm Googling it to, you know, fix it while I'm talking to them. And, you know, the last one was my friend's got an old iPhone that has nearly no memory. And he had to copy some videos and photos off to his Mac. I had no idea how to do it. As far as I'm concerned, when you have a device like that, it should be you plug it in. It's recognized as a USB drive. You drag the items over, whatever the files are, onto your hard drive. It should be any mystical whatever sync thing. That's overcomplicating it to make it simple.
Well, I blame Johnny Ive. Wait, in this article on the Tech Republic, which does seem to be a very quite ad-heavy site, which I will say, tangent, I finally broke down and installed Pi-hole on a Raspberry Pi, a spare Raspberry Pi, because we all have spares, especially with the 4 coming soon to my house. And I'm having the streaming computer is really the only one that I'm worried about having ads. And it does seem like there are some less ads, but nowhere where I thought I was going to be. I thought I was going to be virtually ad-free, but it doesn't seem like it's possible. And I got to say it again. I'm genuinely shocked that this USB-C thing happened to the Raspberry Pi for two reasons. They obviously, anybody would test for them because they're Raspberry Pi without question and do whatever they ask without question. They obviously are focusing everything towards the first world with this Raspberry Pi 4 launch. And my logic is the real reason this port is probably failing is because they decided to go with the cheapest thing they could probably get on the USB-C side. I believe that's probably the real stem of the problem is to save a half a penny without verifying they went with a cheaper part on that port.
I'm betting what happened is, you know, the alpha and beta testers on this probably got shipped aboard, got shipped a Raspberry Pi power supply, got shipped a Raspberry Pi cord, and they just tested it with that and it worked. Now, for me, I'd probably try it out. I'd fire it up and say, okay, it works with that. Let me try it with another USB-C cable I got kicking around, another USB power supply, and see what happens. But I'm betting that's what happened with them. And first off, Dory, you got a Pi 4?
No, because I'm not going to buy any until I get the 4 gig version. And I never heard of a true hard date. And it sounds like, from what I'm hearing, at least the rumor mill is the 4 gig version isn't going to ship for like another 2 weeks.
Well, Kanakit says it's going to ship on the 19th of this month.
And that's the one that costs like $130?
No. I
go,
paid...
go. The Kanakit?
Yeah. That's the company. No. I already pre-ordered it.
Yeah, the Kana by itself is with companies like that, they're always going to ship the kit first, not the actual
is that
board.
yeah because I see they have these overpriced kits. I'm like, really, what the hell is that?
Yeah, and the last time with the and I didn't have the heart to tell you when you ordered it because I knew you were going to be mad, the last Raspberry Pi 3B Plus that they got in, they literally only shipped the kits for like the first almost week, and then they decided to ship just the board itself.
Well, so Brian got one, and he was able to go into CompUSA. He was able to go into a, why can't I remember the name now?
Micro Center,
and walk in and get one. And somebody I knew that would live by a Micro Center, they were going to go on their lunch break and get it for me, but they're already out. They're sold out, and they haven't, as far as I know, they haven't got any new ones in. They may have, but I'm just not tracking it closely enough. But that might have just been an initial release, and there's more coming. So I'm a little surprised at their manufacturing. Don't you think, who wants a 1 gig board? Don't you think people would really want the 4 gig, and you should make more of them?
Yes, but that's not how good marketing goes. Another side tangent. Got an email after the last episode basically berating me could not understand, comprehend how I was such a jerk to the Raspberry Pi Foundation with some of the things I'm saying.
Well, it's about time somebody else got the blame than me, other than me.
Well, I'm hard on everybody, okay? You could ask my mom, but she's dead. I'm hard on everybody. I have very high standards for everybody, including myself, okay? Very high standards. So when, and everything I expect out of the Raspberry Pi Foundation are only things that they already did in the past. All I wanted them to do is to maintain what they were doing with the same ideals and the same morals and ethics. And they decided to not go that route. So if that makes me a jerk, I'm a jerk. Bottom line, nobody has to listen to anything I do. Nobody has to donate to anything I do. I'm not here sponging listeners for money. I'm not here sponging the audience, selling all their information to everybody else. So if you think I'm a jerk because I'm hard on somebody, then you're obviously listening to the wrong content, is what I'll say. Obviously, without a shadow of a doubt, listening to the wrong content. Go listen to people who are kiss-ups. Go listen to people who beg companies for freebies. Go listen to people who sell your information to all kinds of companies. Do not, I repeat, do not listen to anything on Podnuts if you think I am too harsh to anybody.
We're going to lose all two listeners that we have.
I listen, 99% of the reason I do this show is so I have historical bookmarks of links that I found interesting at some point in time. It's my own personal Wikipedia, like, so I can search for things I'm interested in.
Oh, yeah, I do it too. I go through, I'm like, I know we talked about that on a show. Let me go look. Let me go to Podnuts and take a look.
Yeah, and,
absolutely.
And, yeah. And I'll say this, a coworker of mine also went and he got the 2 gig version of the Raspberry Pi, which, don't get me wrong, I'm sure if I didn't have, you know, 13 mini computers surrounding me right now, I would have probably went and got a Raspberry Pi 2, then a Raspberry Pi 4. But there's no doubt they're going to maximize sales if they first release the 1 gig, then release the 2 gig, then release the 4.
Well, okay, so let's just throw fuel on the rumor fire. What do you think, there's going to be an 8 gig?
Well, you saw the paperwork, didn't you?
Yep.
Yeah, so the question is not, are they going, well, okay, they still might not. But I also say this, I've heard two podcasts from people who literally don't have any clue how computers work. And they tried to say, well, because the Raspberry Pi operating system is 32-bit, they can't have an 8 gig.
Oh, Lord, help us.
No, I'm not kidding, Rich. I heard two podcasts say that, and I'm thinking to myself, you are on a Linux show.
And were they sewing podcasts? What were...
No. They just don't know what they're talking about, but spouting off like they know everything.
You can run a 32-bit operating system, or let's just say you can always run a lower bit OS on a higher bit hardware. You can't do the opposite.
Well, no. It doesn't matter. The facade of a 32-bit operating system only being able to support a 4 gig limit was admitted by every manufacturer to be a completely fake ceiling. And back in Linux in 2012, you could load a 32-bit operating system and have 84 gigs of RAM accessible on your computer. So there is no reason why they cannot have a 32-bit operating system and 8 gigs of RAM. Do not let anybody tell you that's why they can't have it, because that just shows that they do not know what they are talking about.
Right. I mean, the 4 gigs, 8 gigs is addressable from a 32-bit operating system.
Yes. And again, if I'm being too harsh, don't listen. Okay. Just don't listen. Okay. Because that's not how computers work. If you want to know how computers work and how many computers work, listen to people who have genuine experience with this kind of stuff and literally beat their stuff up to find out what are the limits and how stuff actually works. There's no reason why a 32-bit operating system, ARM or x86, cannot address 84 gigs of RAM, period. So the question isn't like, you know, will they? The real question is like, do they want to? My belief is they have a true gig NIC with near gig speeds. They have real USB-C 3 with real USB 3 type speeds. They have dual HDMI, which really can't do 4K 60 frames a second right now, but it can do good video. If I was them, in 6 months or 8 months, I would release an 8 gig version and call it the 4B plus or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely, in a heartbeat.
And to be honest, it would be a really good business move for them to do such, because if I buy the 4 gig version, my whole goal is to try to get as close to a desktop-like experience in a form factor that can fit in my pocket. And there's no doubt, you give me 8 gigs of RAM and I can do a lot more than just the same device with 4 gigs of RAM.
Now, if they did eMMC in 8 gigs, that would be like out of the park.
I know. But I'm not holding my breath for eMMC.
Well, see, my goal is, you know, thin client, but also one of the things, if you get 4 gig, 8 gig of RAM, I'm thinking VMware is, they're already touting they run on a Pi with 1 gig. Make it run with 4 gig or 8 gig. You know, release it. Not make it run, because it will obviously run, but release it to the rest of us that we can play with it. Because right now they're using it for like a witness node. They're not actually using it as an ESXi host for virtualization. They're just using it to run ESXi as a witness node for like vSAN.
Right now, to the layman, here's how I think I would explain a witness node. It's almost like a heartbeat monitor. It's something that's in the same stack that has the ability to see multiple devices and decide, and sometimes have the ability to decide to fail over to another device.
Talk about is a quorum, and that you have to have an odd number, or, you know, more than, not necessarily an odd number, but basically it tells who's authoritative, you know, if there's an election.
Gotcha.
That's one of the ways of thinking.
Gotcha. At work, we have, the only time I've seen witness servers is when some vendors do database, I don't want to say clusters, but they don't do mirroring replication correctly on database servers, and then I see witness servers, and they try to tell me it's for failover.
Yeah, well, if one one cluster goes down, then it will say, hey, this cluster is authoritative, and you know, the one that's remaining running.
Gotcha. Well, there's still plenty of more Raspberry Pi 4 stuff to talk about. One, I'll see if I can find the I want to say it was Thingiverse, maybe plans, where it was literally like a circular array.
Oh, that's the one I sent you.
Yeah, it was a circular array of Pi cases specifically for like some massive clustering kind of thing going on. There's now two or three websites that are at least semi-popular, I heard of, that are literally running Raspberry Pi clusters to host the entire website. And here's my logic. Whatever they're doing with the Raspberry Pi 4 today, okay, today, you know, June, yada, yada, whatever, June the 10th.
July.
Thank you. July the 10th. No matter what they're doing on that cluster today, it will only get better, faster, tighter, smoother, more efficient, blah, 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 because the software's going to keep optimizing. But then if you introduce an 8 gig version, imagine what kind of clustering you can get for like $1,000 worth of hardware, where previously to get the same type of functionality and, you know, diversity and scope and power and failover and uptime and fault tolerance would literally probably cost you an easy $20,000.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot to be said out there. There's things it won't do, but there's definite a lot of fun stuff that you can do with 4 gigs or 8 gigs of RAM with a cluster. Right now, so there's two ways of doing this. Right now, you could do Docker on, you know, with 4 gigs of RAM, you got a lot of Docker capability. You run a bunch of Docker containers that aren't too big. You can set up a Docker cluster, or am I using the term wrong? Is it a swarm?
Yeah, I think it's a swarm.
Yeah, so you could set up a Docker swarm, and you could have a bunch of different containers. You could run a database like MySQL, and you can run web servers on top of it, Apache web servers or Lite HTTP on top of it. There's a bunch of things you can do with this, and it's getting very interesting. And even if you're not looking for the brute force horsepower and you're looking to do something in a home lab fashion, which is always what I'm trying to do, if I could set up a VMware vSAN on 3 Raspberry Pis That would be crazy great. That would be a big deal that I can, muck with vSAN on my own, not on the corporate hardware. Or if I could do, some sort of VMware cluster or whatever it may be on my own hardware, on my own lab for under a couple $100 for a lab that I set up. Oh, the other thing. So Docker, and because there is no ESXi in the wild yet, you could do SUSE Linux, and you could do this with different operating systems. SUSE Linux, it's mostly rolled into it that you could do VMs and ARM VMs with. But you could also just install either Xen or KVM on pretty much any operating system that'll run on a Pi.
Gotcha. Yeah. I think it's only going to get more, I don't want to say dynamic, but it's going to get more and more diverse as time goes on, the impact where we're going to see these things going. Now, I do remember as soon as the board came out, there's another link there in the notes, Rich. It's actually two of them, like 973 and 974. I tried to at least put them in some kind of order this week. As soon as the Raspberry Pi got launched, everyone was literally couldn't wait to write their articles for clickbaitiness about the
Yes,
Raspberry Pi and
or
heat,
videos.
or videos, yes, about the Raspberry Pi and heat. Literally, like warning people that you'll get burnt. Okay, look, I understand. Look, yes, it got hot. Of course, it got hot. It's new. That's what many computers do. And if you thought, and you, and if you thought that got hot, don't buy an orange Pi. That's all I'm saying.
Right,
Because
right.
that e easily got hotter. Okay, easily got hotter. And anybody with any experience, again, I'm going to say any experience in computers will remember there were decades where our computers didn't have fans.
Oh
Okay,
yeah.
okay. And I'm soft repeating something I heard from Joel on Tilt. He messaged me. And then things got mature enough to a point to where somebody put a fan on a computer, and then once somebody put a fan on an x86 computer, for the rest of our lives, it seems like we're going to have a fan on an x86 computer until it gets insanely mature, low heat, low power. Then we can, on some devices, take the fan off. And now we're at that stage in ARM where stuff in the future is basically going to have a fan on it. And honestly, I kind of agree with them. But it only took, what, a week and a half? And there's updated firmware, you put it on, and voila, your Raspberry Pi is not getting as hot.
That's cool. Haha.
Yeah, now with that said, there were two things in the notes, is what I'm going to say. The first one is the one I'm probably going to actually do, and it's a Thingiverse. Oh man, I didn't hit the meant to hit that one there. Is a Thingiverse link in the notes, 975. This is what I really would like to print for my Pi when it gets here, kind of thing, because I know I got time. And essentially, it is a normal, quote unquote, Raspberry Pi type case, but it has a built-in slot for a 30 millimeter fan.
Oh, nice.
But here's the thing: I don't want a 30 miller. I don't want a 30 millimeter fan, because if you look at the main picture in it, there's plenty of room for a bigger fan.
Right, you can put so a bigger fan not only moves more air, but it's quieter.
Ding, ding,
And
ding, ding, ding.
there's no heat sink on this. So if I was doing this case, I might make the case a little taller, or I may just flip it around, put the fan on the outside of the case. So I can put a taller heat sink on the inside.
And to be honest, that was my goal. That was my logic exactly. This is a fine case. Okay, that's what I'll say. This is I'd really like to design this case, but it's tricky to understand if you don't know 3D printing. But my logic was I'd put a 40 millimeter fan on the outside of it. And yes, that's the two biggest things about any kind of fan technology. And it's the inverse square law. If you don't know about it, you'll need to watch hours of YouTube video like I did in the last 2 weeks to even begin to understand it. Inverse square law means you take a 30 millimeter fan, change it out to 40 millimeter fan. You will get far more than the percentage of the size increase in added performance. So while it's only, a third bigger, no, you get like twice as much performance out of it. And the noise is insanely less, even if you buy just a moderate fan. You don't even need to get a great one. Here's the thing, Rich. It took me a minute to understand what's going on. If you go down onto this link and you have the more makes, I believe it's the very first make, the one that's like gray. That's the one you have to. No, it ain't that one. Dang it.
I dropped it on line 989, last line in the chat. So you're talking about the radial stacking cluster array?
No. There's one of these builds that this is based off of. This print is based off of. And what they don't explain to you is if you take a look at the STL files, if you take a look at the raw files, it's solid. There's no holes in the top and bottom at all whatsoever. Okay. What you have to do in your printing program is say you do not want to build a top or bottom wall at all. And instead, what you do is you change the infill percentage and the infill pattern, and that determines the pattern of holes on the top and bottom case. So you can customize the type of airflow you have. And I really like that idea. So that's really what I'm going to do. And my logic is I'm going to get a 40 millimeter fan and literally just super glue it to the top of it.
Yep, that works.
But heat sinks are not all the same. Heat sinks are not all built the same. Heat sinks are not all made the same. So if you take a look at 976 in the notes, is where we have a heat sink that's unlike any other heat sink I've seen for a Raspberry Pi type computer before. Did you take a look at this one?
Oh, yeah. But come on. Don't you watch Mick Make? He's got like this salad bowl size heat sink with a fan on it that he puts on the Raspberry Pi.
No, I don't watch almost any YouTube from anybody like that. I can't sit through them. My time is far too precious.
Yeah, this looks worthwhile. It's $20, so it's a fan with a heat sink, and it looks like it's got heat pipes on it. So that should be highly effective.
Well, I see. Here's the thing: price wise, good. You know, great. $20. I have no problem paying $20 for what I, you know, what could be a very comparable heat distribution system on a Raspberry Pi. I love the fan. I love the fan it's built in. I love the material it's made out of. But if you go to seedstudio.com, the link in there, and you go to the third picture down, I want to say you kind of get an idea of just how tiny the physical connection is with the board. Yes, it's really only the processor, which really that's where most of the heat is emanating from. But I kind of keep thinking, don't I want as much surface area to make as contact with as much surface area on the board as possible to suck off as much heat as possible?
The memory chips will get warm also. So most Raspberry Pi heat sink kits come with three heat sinks. So it's the CPU, memory, and I think it's one other chip on the bottom.
Right. Well, here's the dirty secret. The last firmware that came out that cools down the Raspberry Pi, did you see what it actually did?
No, I didn't read that.
Nobody did, from what I can tell. The only person who did was, I want to say, Explaining Computers was the only one I saw that did. It actually has nothing to do with the processor. It's actually turning down the bus on the USB bus host controller until there's a load on it.
Okay.
Which apparently is enough to bring it down, I want to say, almost 12 degrees Celsius.
Oh.
Yeah, so I keep thinking I really want to try to get as effective of a solution of a heat sink as possible on the Raspberry Pi 4 gig, because I'm going to pound it. If I can, I'm going to do video editing on that thing. You know what I mean?
Well, apparently you can, clock it. You can raise the clock speed on the darn thing.
Oh, yeah. On the last couple Raspberry Pi Raspi-configs, you could, I don't want to say overclock it, but you could maximize the clock speed. And here's the real thing I don't like about this heatsink, Rich. It has such a small connection spot. It has such a big lumbering heatsink. I would think if I put this thing on the Raspberry Pi, I then should never move the Raspberry Pi, because it looks like if you just tilt it over a little bit, it's going to fall off.
Yeah, I don't know how it makes the physical connection, if it just has like a double-sided sticky tape on it or what.
That's what it looks like. It's just using sticky material. So because of that, I'm purposely not buying this. I purposely have a Google alert set, so when somebody does a YouTube video showing actual like review performance benchmarks on this device, I'm going to get pinged about it because I want to see other people in the real world with this device on their Raspberry Pi before I spend a penny.
Good point. Good point. But it does have a heat pipe on it, which leads me to believe that's how it's dissipating the heat through those big bed fins.
Well, and that's the thing. If you don't move the Raspberry Pi, I honestly can see it being a good solution. I'm not going to say a fantastic solution, but I can see it being in the top couple percentage points of the best heat sinks that are out there. And Extreme Tech, I want to say, was the one 974 we talked about a little bit. They were the ones that I thought did a really good job of documenting all the performance differences from the Raspberry Pi 3 to the Raspberry Pi 4, but also just today or yesterday explaining Computas. The best thing I like about his videos is he literally does, he doesn't do the best test, but he does the same test he can possibly do on, if he can, the exact same hardware, and then he literally shows you all the numbers in the chart form very nicely and neatly, almost anal-like, to give you an idea of what the actual differences are in these boards. And I will tell you this, this Raspberry Pi 4 board, if the last Raspberry Pi 3 was worth $35, this is basically worth about $80 to $100.
Right, if you're comparing on a $35 horsepower of a Raspberry Pi 3, yes.
Right now, I don't have a link to it yet. I literally watched it sped up because I had to. Explaining Computers did a video, I think today, comparing the Raspberry Pi 4 and the Jetson Nano. Did you take a look at that one?
No, that was a couple days ago. That was a couple days ago.
Okay. Now, as soon as you saw the title of that video, did you think, well, this is going to be a bit unfair, is it not?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought it was going to be, you know, a Top Fuel Dragster versus a VW Bug.
Yeah, I thought this is really not fair. What is he doing? It's like a, you know, a $35 board versus a $100 board. Why would he do this?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting, the results, but then again, if you do certain specific tests on something that favor one device and not another, you're going to get a certain set of results. So, he didn't do any machine learning, so there are things that the Jetson was designed to do, and there are things that the Raspberry Pi isn't designed to do. So, I think it's kind of easy to pick some things, and I'm not critiquing what he did. Everything he did is valid, and he's absolutely not misleading. But I don't think he picked at what each of them shined at. He tried to be comparative as what you can do with a Raspberry Pi 3/4, and how does the Jetson stack up against that, which... That's kind of like me delivering cement with my Genesis coupe. You know, it's not the right device to deliver cement. It's the device you want to go fast and you want to be solo or with two people in. That's right. What it's designed right for. Also, he did mention the other thing about the Jetson is that the software or operating system wasn't optimized and that they're going to be working on it, that he talked to the developers and they're going to be doing some further optimization. So the Jetson, I think, is a great machine learning device. It's not something I would be using in place of a Raspberry Pi. It might be something I would use if I thought an Odroid XU4 wasn't good enough. And I would hazard a guess that the Jetson is better than the Odroid N2. You know, again, not with actually doing any tests because I don't have a Jetson. I do have the N2.
Yeah, I mean, well, and I'll say this. Not in his defense, but, I mean, how old do you think he is, Rich? And with that said, I'm pretty sure when he was in his prime, machine learning was just something that was in, like, sci-fi movies. You know what I mean? I'm not sure he completely understands all of computing and the more advanced, more present day kind of stuff. And I'm not trying to insult him.
I thought he did a video on machine learning.
He did, but don't watch it. I'll say to that. Don't watch it. He didn't. Yes, I agree. His tests were not specified at either one of the things that they were great at, but he did, I think, fair general testing. But Raspberry Pi is much more of a general computer. So, right. so in some ways, the Raspberry Pi was utterly competitive with the Jetson Nano. So if you have general use cases, I think to take the positive out of what he did, if you're doing general use case type of thing, then you probably are better off spending less money and getting a Raspberry Pi 4. Jetson Nano is, if I'm not mistaken, a genuine NVIDIA product. There should be no hesitation in working on the operating system. This is a multi-billion dollar company. It should already be done. You know, call me crazy, but it should already be done. This is a multi-billion dollar company. If they want this operating system to purr like a cat, it should purr like a cat.
Yeah, I don't think they have a whole lot of excuses to hide behind, but I'm guessing it's probably very well tuned for machine learning, and it may not be so well tuned to, you know, good in that test that he did head to head with the Pi 4.
Well, yeah, and I'll just say, to me, I don't know how well they can be quote unquote optimized for machine learning, because it's still such a growing dynamic thing. And I didn't see really much GPU testing, because really the Maxwell GPU in the Nano is ballistic. The only thing he didn't do, which I wish he would have done, because, and here's the thing, I don't know if he knows about it, go into Chromium where he did the Chromium benchmark test and verify if hardware acceleration is turned on and make sure it's either on both or off on both, because you will see dramatically different differences.
Okay. Dramatically
different. And, you know, I don't have a Jetson Nano to verify any of his results.
Gotcha.
But it was still a really good video is what I'm going to say. I really do like the video. So in short, Raspberry Pi, I don't know why you wouldn't need 4 gigs of RAM, but if you think you don't need 4 gigs of RAM, go get a Raspberry Pi 4. You know, if no matter what, you need at least a heat sink on it, but realistically, you probably need a heat sink and a fan on it if you're going to do anything remotely heavy, which if you're getting a Raspberry Pi 4, I'm going to guess you are. So you don't only need a heat sink, you need some type of circulating air over top the device. And be careful what USB-C cable you get. I've never given so many caveats for a single board computer.
Yeah. Sometimes I found that some cheap USB cables aren't thick enough and they don't flow enough current. Or they've worn out. Like they were cheap and they wore out, and like one will work, like I got a 10 pack, and one won't work.
Yeah, I mean, to me, all computing connectivity or power delivering cables and SD cards and thumb drives, I can't buy cheap anymore. I can't. I've had too many of them act wonky on me or fail on me. Because when I first got like my first like Raspberry Pi 2 or something, I remember going through like 4 or 5 cables till the damn thing finally started to work right. And it took me a week plus to figure out it was a cable issue.
Yeah, and you're definitely right about the cards. I only want to get SanDisk cards from now on. I'm done with the cheap cards.
Yeah, so I can't really think of anything else Raspberry Pi 4 related, except, you know, when the 4 gig version comes out, trust me, I am going to get one. I have to get at least one. Trust me when I say I am going to put it through every possible use case I can think of putting it through that is desktop related. There's no doubt. If you want to run an FTP server on it, or a multimedia server on it, or a Plex server on it, or a Nextcloud server on it, or a OwnCloud server on it, or a print server thing on it, or OpenVPN thing on it, none of those things are going to have any issue at all running pretty dang butter smooth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll say it again. Raspberry Pi Raspbian is fine. It's perfectly fine. Hair is also fine. If you want a better experience, then you need to do one of two things, Armbian or Diet Pi. If you just want to follow tutorials online and do what they say, then just use Raspbian. If you really want to take advantage of the device, do things in a more efficient way, in a more simplified way, with literal better drivers on it, you need to go with either Armbian or Diet Pi.
Okay, so I fully agree on all of that, and the only other thing I want to say about Pi 4s is line 989 is that cluster case you were talking about. So, Dor, you've said one thing that I think is incredibly valuable when we're looking at these things. Here's my beef. All right, I'll tell you what. Are you looking at the Thingiverse page?
Oh, yes, I am.
So you've I would actually be parroting what you would say. Tell me what my beef is about this.
Give me a second, because I just glanced at it before and I didn't really look at it. Well,
Yeah, you're thinking
okay.
too deep if you don't know it already.
First off, I don't see any actual pictures of anything
Ding, ding,
actually
ding, ding.
printed. It's all just renders.
So, I mean, this is like 3D printed Death Star gorgeous. The idea, how many stacks of vertically? One, two, three. He's got three vertically, and how many does it go around? What? Is it 10 around?
It looks like 10.
So, very cool setup. I would love to see the cabling layout and routing and stuff like that, and power routing. It absolutely, the next Tony Stark, what was it? The first Iron Man movie had the oil cooled motherboard, in the fish tank. It's like, yeah, that'll be sitting on his desk next time. Very cool looking. Except it'll be like sintered printed out of titanium, and they'll heat it up so it has all those crazy blue tones and stuff like that in it. Anyhow, looks very cool.
If you scroll down in Thingiverse, it will tell you if people printed it and then posted pictures of it. There is none of that.
Right, there's two comments.
That's the second bad sign, because usually if they don't have a picture, at least somebody else will take a do the print and share their pictures of it. Nobody has. It is remixed from other projects, which means he didn't do it all on his own. So hopefully there's been some kind of testing with it, as well. But the other thing he didn't do, tell me how much it would cost to do this roughly and fill it loaded with pies.
Well, so I'm gonna throw them under the bus. I don't know if the cases the fans fit in the case because they won't fit on top of the case if the fan mounting is gonna go that way. Because when you stack, he doesn't have a gap between the pies vertically, which also is gonna be a problem for the layer down because he's showing three layers tall. And if you're going to be pulling air from the top, and if the fan is in there and the next case blocks the airflow, that's kind of a bad design already.
Well, yeah, realistically, it should be a stagger step. It should be like a spiral staircase
Right.
where there's the bottom one, and then when you go up, you go over 33 degrees kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, a third of the way of a quarter over. And then when you go up, you go another third over. So it's
Kind of like a
like a
radial engine on an airplane.
yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely visually impressive. If I designed this, I'd be very proud of myself, but I would have considered the airflow a little better, I think. What was it? It was the original cheese grater Max. They had the craziest air ducting on those things. They're very precise. It wasn't just like your PC with a motherboard, there's a fan somewhere in the case. They made sure there were air ducts going to specific elements, to the GPU, to the CPU, to blow over the hard drives. They're very specific with how the air moved. And if you're dealing with an aircraft engine cooling, like, because what's my favorite saying? It's liquid cooling an airplane is about as smart as air cooling a submarine. Some airplane cowling setups, you got to be very precise about how the air moves in the cowling. And that's where I come from. At least my airplane, I had the cooling well situated, and other people never get their cooling correct in the type of airplane I fly. But cool looking case. I would definitely fork this design and do a modification of it.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a good to me. It's a great start, great concept, great idea. I love the idea of having, what unfortunately is 30 pies. I can see having a little bit less pies sitting in a corner, churning, doing things like transcoding video, downloading YouTube channels, synchronizing mass storage devices, doing stuff like that.
Well, even if he did variants on the ring design, so this is a 10, it's populated with 10 pies going around the ring. If he did a four, a five, something like that would make it a little bit more palatable for us poor people that can't afford 30 pies.
Yeah, true, true. Okay, I don't really know of any more Raspberry Pi related stuff, but there is actually other news that has happened.
Buster?
Well, yes, but look, the good thing about Debian is it's Debian. It's solid, it's stable, it's boring. There's a new version. Oh, sorry. They're great. I don't care because it's just going to be another solid, stable version that people are going to complain about very shortly, saying that the software packages are too old. I'm happy there's a new version of it out, but it's one of those non-spectacular news items. But there was an actual, to me, exciting news item. July 3rd, it was posted on line 979 to the official GitHub account for AYU Fan. I have no idea how to pronounce his name, but he's one of the major Pine64 slash RK3399 developers there are, is what I can tell. And
Yeah,
he knows how to.
he's the major porter of the operating systems to the ARM platform.
He, she, or whatever. Yes, yeah.
Yes.
They are doing a lot of li heavy lifting, is what I can tell. They might not be writing the code right. They might just be literally doing a library here or two, linking the right stuff up and porting the code over. But they're doing it, is what I'm going to say. And I'm really happy. And what they posted was a Chromium OS build, a official, in air quotes, Chromium OS build, not a Chrome OS build, because it can't be Chrome OS build, but a Chromium OS build for what is the ROC 64, but in actuality, it's for the PineBook Pro. That's one of the use cases I can honestly see the PineBook Pro being $200 excelling pretty good at, is being a Chrome OS like experience, because it's not going to be Chrome OS, it's Chromium. But they posted code to it, which made me really happy. Because I like choices on things like this. And again, the Pine people, the Pine community, the Pine fans are doing everything they can to try to make sure that this PineBook Pro, ROC 64, and ROC Pro 64 are all successful devices.
This is very cool. Although I'm doing something with my Rock Pro 64 right now.
Well, I have my Rock Pro sitting here being my next cloud server, rock solid. Sorry, pun intended. I have my second Rock Pro sitting, or my Rock sitting there, Rock 64 in standby. I've had a discussion with MRP Tech from MRP Tech Reviews podcast, where he was looking for something to host a next cloud server that would literally have 20 plus people on it. And he was asking, should I get an Intel NUC? Should I get this? And should I get that? And I said, no. All you need is a ROC 64, or, and to be honest, a Raspberry Pi 4. Because if you're hosting this on anything except for like fiber grade enterprise type networking material, the biggest slowdown in your experience and your user's experience is going to be your own internet connection. So hypothetically, let's say you have 300 meg speed, which you probably don't. The likelihood of the ROC 64 or the Raspberry Pi 4 being the slowest point of their experience, my belief is low. It's going to be the network that's going to be the actual slow part. I don't know. I'm just guessing. And then really quick, line 980, and I'm really enjoying when I see May update from Pine company. June update from Pine Company, July update from Pine Company, because every time I see one of these postings, it really is loaded with information that literally I have to share on my Android device to an application called Say It, so it reads it to me out loud as my eyeballs read the text. So basically, the PineBook Pro is nearing enough of a status to where they're feeling confident on July 25th, they're going to open up the pre-order process for the PineBook Pro, which tells me hopefully it's less than 2 months from launch.
So I'm pretty excited about this. I do have an anonymous benefactor who has sent me Pine hardware, and he hasn't reached out to me. So I'm a little like, and I don't want to bother anyone either. I don't want to, and I'm happy to pay $200 for this. And I've been passing around my PineBook, not the PineBook Pro. Joel's had it for a while. Dan's had it. I don't know if he's got to use it yet, but the value I got out of it for $100, I am anxious to give them $200 for this.
I absolutely agree. But here's the thing. Honestly, my personal belief is if the first one was worth $100, this looks to me like it's worth $300. That's how much of a boost this is compared to the original Pine Book. And there's a couple reasons. Not plastic, metal. That right there alone, the build quality is going to make me feel really confident about having it. But two, the processor is better, the RAM is better, the bus is better, the Bluetooth is better, whatever. Okay, but here's the thing. Me being kind of privacy, conspiracy theorist thing, there's three special keys on the computer that will bypass the entire operating system and either enable or disable Bluetooth Wi-Fi, microphone, or webcam. I really do like the fact that if I hold down a special keystroke, doesn't matter what the operating system says or wants, it's going to disable my cam. And when I power off the device, power back on, the camera will still be disabled. And so literally, if you try to do like a mod probe in Linux terms on the device with the camera disabled, it literally will not find the camera.
That's very cool. I mean, that's something. Who's the guy from Purism?
I don't know.
Is what he was doing with he was doing kind of like a MacBook like laptop that was completely open source,
and it had the price of a MacBook too. I'll say this: sadly, it wasn't completely open. It was as completely open as he could get. I will have Richard Stallman. I will have him speak through me. Home. It wasn't completely open. It can't be completely open. It was running an Intel processor with binary blobs on it that he could not remove. Being a genuine distributor, the Purism guy did get the type of Intel chip with the fewest number of binary blobs on it at all, including the removal of vPro. vPro was the first thing that started all of this bad design being have the light on it, Spectre meltdown, the NIC on NIC zero. So getting as few binary blobs as possible does make it as open as possible and with the greatest hope of actual security as possible, but it's not open. It's not a fully open device. If someone like Richard Stallman cannot use it, which he can't use it, it's not completely open. It's good, but I'm not spending, I think it was $2,800 for a laptop. I don't have that kind of money.
Well, all right, so my MacBook Pro from 2012 is still my workhorse, but my 14-inch $200 Chromebook from 2 years ago is my daily driver. I do everything other than editing video on it. So I am super happy with it.
Yeah, and thing about Chromebooks, I'll say this, the only real bad thing about Chromebooks is it's literally a ticking time bomb. Whenever you go buy a Chromebook now, you have to pay very close attention when that specific model was first released. Because once that model's first released, right then and there, the clock starts to tick. And 5 years, virtually to the day, for 98% of all the Chromebooks, support will end. So just because it's new to you, if you go into a store and buy a 3+ year old Chromebook, you're not going to get 5 years worth of service.
Gotcha.
Well, and I'll say one of the stupidest things about the Pine Book that I like, two things I like. It ain't white. I couldn't stand that mine was white because smudges got on it, didn't look good. This is now like a very like blackish looking matte black material. They're also going to have a very specific Pine 64 keycap instead of the Windows key or the Linux key. So they're trying to do like their own branding kind of stuff on it. There is a little bit of news about the Pine Tab and the Pine Phone. None of it is really, groundbreaking or really truly newsworthy is what I'll say. But I will say this. I really do want to get the Pine Tab maybe as much as I want to get the Pine Book Pro. But I do expect the Pine Book Pro to be a million times more useful and functional because it's a laptop. Tablets aren't supposed to be. But I can still see myself enjoying the experience of the Pine Tab a great deal And if I am capable, I also do want to get the Pine phone, hopefully within the first 6 months of it being launched. And it got me thinking that I really am almost became a fanboy of Pine 64 over the years, even though I will say bad stuff about them. I really do like how they treat their community. I really do like how they treat us, the users. I really do like the customer support I've gotten through them. So I'm really happy with this company so far.
Oh yeah, I think they genuinely enjoy being in the maker community. I've had zero bad experiences with them. And I remember the first time I heard you talk about Pine 64, I'm like, what the heck is that? And what's he talking about? And I'm so glad I've had an experience with them.
Yeah, the next line in the notes, 981, the Tech Re Public, which look, I'm not a fan of Tech Republic, but honestly, they posted some interesting stuff to me. So has Forbes in the last couple of weeks, but this one definitely caught my eye because it was basically an interview with people at the Pine community, and the basic question was how Pine 64 is creating a community to compete with the Raspberry Pis. And this is what I found really interesting. Pine, honestly, unlike Friendly ARM, unlike Orange Pi, unlike seemingly everybody else in the industry, and to be honest, also unlike Raspberry Pi. Raspberry Pi Foundation does not go out of its way to directly interact with a lot of community. They have organizations and sub-organizations and sponsees that deal with community, that interact with community, which is fine. That's their option. Pine literally has people in the company in deep in communities, answering questions, driving engagement, and helping people when they can. So I hate to say it like this, but it seems to me like it could be in 2 or 3 years from now, Pine might be the actual premier single board computing company with the biggest community, maybe, if they keep up at this pace and if they stick with their morals and their ethics and their beliefs and their interactions and their desires and how they're handling community type things. I have really high hopes for the company as a whole to really be doing good stuff.
Well, all right. So I'm very excited about, the PineBook Pro, the tablet I'm interested in, but the phone I'm super interested in. Of course, single board computers are absolute. Wait, they were also doing a camera. They were doing like a smart camera too, right?
Yeah, it was like a mini cube camera. Yeah, it was intended to be like an IoT type device.
So if 2 or 3 of these things hit and go well, gain market share, they're going to be doing real good.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I really honestly don't expect the Pine Tab tablet to really be hit any kind of, record selling numbers. I really don't expect the phone to either, to be honest. What I do expect is the people that do buy them are passionate about the device and will literally be the kind of people that once they first log in will voluntarily opt in to survey type programs. And it wouldn't shock me if a relatively good amount of people buying them are genuine people who want to develop for the platform. My real goal is to get one of the Pine phones, use my Android phone really as a podcast player, because I know that's what it's going to excel at versus any Linux device for years to come, and then try to use the Linux phone as a genuine phone and alternate computing device on the road. I would love to see that happen, but I'm definitely not going to hold my breath. But yeah, I do see at least some of their devices being successful. It's just a question of, how many and when.
Yeah, that I think they've, even if this round doesn't work for them, I'm sure they're going to be warming up for the next round that's going to be exceptional.
Yeah, so
And
I'm
I'm
definitely.
not saying I know anything bad about it. Let me get that out of the park. I have very high hopes for the PineBook Pro. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, and I will encourage people, if you're at all interested in single board computers, mini computers or and community or and development. I definitely encourage you check out this link on TechRe Public in the notes. It is one of the longer articles I've literally sat through in my life. They go over a lot of different points. They ask a lot of, to be honest, good questions. And I'm some of their answers I found pretty interesting. Okay. There was another link here. I once wanted to redrop in the notes. 982. This is the kind of link every like 3 or 6 months I get somebody asking me a question, and I always come back to this link. Well, actually, there's two links. One is the Wikipedia comparison of single board computers. Fantastic page with a lot of single board computers on it where you can compare. But the maybe second most popular question I get is, what Wi-Fi adapter should I buy for better performance on my Raspberry Pi computer? And this is a elenux.org link. And it's basically like as close as you can get to an official listing of Wi-Fi chipsets that work best on a Raspberry Pi or a Raspberry Pi operating system is what I'm going to say. They even tell you which ones are the troublemakers. Now, here's the thing. Wi-Fi adapters mean nothing. Make and model brand names mean nothing, because you can have the same model and over a 3-year time span, they can change the chipset 2 or 3 times. So you always want to be aware of what the chipset is. Like when you buy a car, diesel or gas, you know, 6-cylinder or 8-cylinder. You can have a Chevy, you know, truck with a whole bunch of different kinds of configurations inside. Same thing with Wi-Fi dongles, adapters. So like if you need a Wi-Fi that can do access point mode and ad hoc network and other things, then you really need to go to this link and peruse it and find a correct chipset that fits your need. So you know when you go buy one, it's going to work best for you. And honestly, with a little due diligence and a little bit of time and a little bit of research, you can get a really, really good Raspberry Pi dongle for less than $7-8. Yeah, and to be honest, Rich, I wanted to bring up the next link. You know, if people are mad at me speaking mean about stuff, man, they're not going to like this one. Line 983, PiTop. PiTop was the company.
That. I figured you'd have, well, I want to hear what you're going to say.
Well, I mean, I'll say this. They got $300 out of me to buy essentially a extremely subpar, screen monitor and keyboard laptop enclosure where you can stick a Raspberry Pi in the side of it. I spent $300 for this. Realistically, because of the quality of the trackpad and the quality of the keyboard, maybe 120, 150 if I'm feeling gracious. So anytime I see them launch something, I'm extremely dissatisfied.
I got a great keyboard for my Raspberry Pi and trackpad. It was $15.
Yeah, Logitech makes good stuff. Okay, so PiTop is putting out what they call a Raspberry Pi-based PiTop mini PC, and they're literally charging $200 for this. It amazes me. It truly amazes me, because it really is nothing more that, from what I can tell, than just a case with a couple buttons on it and a hole in it where you can have a ribbon cable go in. And that's it. Now, if you want more functionality, you can buy what they call a foundation plate, which I'm sure is probably going to cost like another $50. I don't understand who has money sitting around burning a hole in their pocket with the ability to buy this kind of thing. But somebody obviously does, because they're buying it. It has like a 1-watt internal speaker, your normal ports, normal GPIO. Oh, it has a cooling fan. That's a plus. Aluminum heat sink. Sure, that's a plus. And that's about it. Nothing else special on it. 4 programmable buttons for $200.
It's got LiPo batteries in it too.
Yeah, for $200.
But you get that 128x64 OLED mini screen. And Dor, I thought you were goofing. It is a 1-watt internal speaker.
Yes. I'm not kidding.
I thought you were goofing.
No, so I mean, look, if I lived in a really big house and my kids went to private schools, kind of thing. I could see donating like 30 of these to my kids' class for them to do projects to learn stuff. But actual usability for this to me seems, I don't want to say non-spectacular, but I think you'd be better off spending less money and buying a 3D printer, and you'll get more functionality out of it in the end.
Yeah, this is. I don't know if they're planning it to work with Legos or something like a Mindstorm type thing.
Yeah, they do have a separate like robot pack. That's
That's
not
not too much.
200. That I want to say is around
Oh,
280.
Lord. Well, Advanced Vehicle Kit, 349, blah, 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 or 499. Lord, I bought cars for much less money. All right, they're totally. I'm just. This is a family friendly show.
I know, but here's the thing. They're only charging too much if nobody buys it. Let the market decide if what they're charging is too much. Because if people buy it, hey, more power to them. Keep selling expensive things. I'm just not going to be your customer.
Yeah, you're not getting that money from me.
Okay, and I had another link in here, and the only reason I wanted to bring it because I wanted to stir a conversation to see if we could actually figure something else out. Line 984 in the notes.
I was hoping you weren't going to bring this.
Well, I am only because I when I first saw it, I thought, you know, I almost like the idea of this. It's basically a standoff like hat board for the Raspberry Pi that gives you a real-time clock and power management for the Raspberry Pi. Now, here's the thing. I'm going to go in reverse order. Power management for the Raspberry Pi. I do really like the idea of having a like fatherboard sitting on top the Raspberry Pi that I can communicate with and control power and resets and
And shut down.
shutdowns off of it. And that's the
So it
impression I
works
get
like
what
an
it can do.
ILO.
That's the impression I get, yes, that it can do that on top of a real-time clock.
All right, so that has some value. I mean, if it's just RTC, then we're it's a moot conversation.
Well, I'll ask you to say to the listeners, why would someone need a real-time clock? And what does a real-time clock, what's the benefit of having a real-time clock on a device?
If it's solar powered in a field and it doesn't connect by network, no, I would still have it connect by network. Yeah, nothing.
Well, no, there is genuine use cases for real-time clock. If you need utterly accurate clock pre-completion of boot, that's the only
Only
use
use
case I
case
can
I can.
genuinely think of, because if you need genuine accurate time before it can connect and do an NPC network time check, then you need a real-time clock. Or
Or
if
if
there are
there.
firmware related things that you need to exist over the boot cycle.
Okay, if this was going to be flying on a balloon as a near space experiment, yeah, maybe I'd want the real-time clock.
There's if the Raspberry Pi had like a real BIOS, I could see wanting a real-time clock just to save settings. Like if
Right,
you
right.
like if it would only boot off of USB 3 repetitively if it had a real-time clock, then I could see it. But it doesn't. Anytime you boot any Linux computer up, basically any Linux computer, the first thing they always do is they first check network time servers to see what the time is. So I don't understand why they put that as the first billing thing on this device, because I mean,
So
everything's
everything's
connected to a
connected to a
network
network
these
these days.
days.
Now, power management, is it going to work like an ILO or an iDRAC, or what does that mean? Or does it mean, as far as I'm concerned, MyRav Power is power management.
I believe it can do ILO, LILO type thing, and you can have on-off scripts. Sequence scripts is the way that I got it.
Okay.
I do also have a Google alert set in my stream for text articles for anybody mentioning this, because I want to hear some real world use cases of what people are doing with this. Because if it can be like an ILO type thing, it'd be like a host m management of power, like force it to come back on if there's a weird power outage kind of thing, come up clean kind of thing. I almost like this, but otherwise, I don't understand who the target market is.
Yeah, that's kind of a sh very narrow market that you're going for with something like this.
Yeah, with that said, I still am happy to see anybody putting out anything for any of these mini computers. I just really wish they were all, I don't want to say useful, but equally useful for like everybody. Okay, The next one I got to bring just because we nailed it, Rich. We frigging nailed it. I love it when we say something and then ironically a week or two later it really comes to fruition, because we don't do it a lot, okay? A lot of the things when we say it turns out to be wrong when we guess stuff, but this one we nailed it. Line 985 in the notes. We said when we were looking at this GPD P2 Max 8.9 inch mini laptop kind of thing, that it has no backlit keyboard, and what are you going to do, have like a USB light lighting your keyboard? We said something like that, not exactly that.
That's what I do with my Chromebook.
Yeah, so I find it hysterical that GPD P2 Max crowdfunding campaign confirmed they're going to be shipping their mini device with a flexible USB light. So you can plug it into the side of the computer, hang it over top the keyboard so you can see the keyboard when you're typing in the dark.
It's on my nightstand right now.
I just find that absolutely hysterical, because to me, I wouldn't be proud of them to be shipping that kind of thing out. And here's the thing. If you go on YouTube and look around at all for USB LEDs, how I got mine.
Mm-hmm.
Back when I got these, they were, I want to say, three of them for $1. Now it's hard to find them for less than $1 a piece. But you see plenty of those exact same lights that they're giving away for literally like 80 cents. Yep. They're like so cheap on eBay, it's ridiculous. So for them to almost flaunt the fact that they're giving this away, it's almost like an insult.
I have no idea what the magic is about a backlit keyboard and why it's such a hard thing to do on a budget.
It makes no sense, because you and I know a couple things. The actual lights themselves cost fractions of pennies. The actual cabling cost fractions of pennies. Maybe the port to plug it in is taking up too much valuable real estate.
The only thing I can think of is maybe the design of...
Take a loss, Rich. There you go.
Yeah, I don't. Is the design of the key that dramatically different and costly? You know, that's the only thing I can figure out.
No, because a fair amount of the backlit keyboards, the key itself isn't even translucent at all. It's just the light around the key shines out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that, I don't want to say is acceptable, but it's more acceptable than no backlight.
Yep.
Okay, Rich, were there any other mini PC type things that you wanted to?
Yeah, there's about four things, and you're going to have to help me with my memory here. There were a couple of projects I tried and just kind of, you know, I wasn't happy with. And like two shows ago, before we knew the Pi 4 was coming out, I was going to talk about it. So was it Mozilla Hub? Is that what it was called?
To do what?
IoT stuff. It's Gateway, that's it. Mozilla Gateway?
Right. Mozilla Gateway. Yes.
Yeah, I got it running. It didn't work with anything I had, so it was easy to get running, no problem. The social media thing, I couldn't get running. Tried a whole bunch, couldn't figure out how to get it to work. There was a network monitoring thing. Was it NEMS? Was that it?
That's right.
I got it running. Couldn't figure out how to configure it. So I loaded Observium again on actually a Pi Zero this time.
Well, and that's not good, because you have a little bit of experience in configuring network monitoring stuff.
Yep. Yeah. And maybe if you're like a Nagios guru, that'll come easy to you. I got it running. Wasn't a big deal. Couldn't figure out how to make it work. The other thing I did just for the heck of it was, I've said this a couple of times, I've got a bunch of different drives kicking around that aren't doing anything that are perfectly good. And if you're going to do some sort of RAID, a lot of that requires you have the same size drive. But there's something called LVM, Logical Volume Manager. And I initially loaded it on the Odroid N2. Then I'm like, well, wait a second. The Odroid N2... is a little bit better of a machine than to just use as a drive hub or gateway or whatever, or aggregator. So LVM, first, let me tell you what it does. It allows you to take a bunch of different size drives, and basically make them act as one drive. And you can dynamically add more drives to it. It'll just add the space. And I had it running with a laptop drive, with drives in a SATA dock, freestanding external drives, you know, all USB 3 plugging in first into the Odroid N2. But since I had the daughter card on the Pine Rock 64 Pro, I had the USB card, USB 3 card on that. I plugged them all into that and got it running. So I didn't finish my goal. My goal was to have Plex running on the Odroid N2 and content on the Pine Rock Pro 64 on the LVM drives and see how that worked. I didn't finish that. But I did some early tests with the Odroid N2, and I was able to put video files on it and play it off it just by mapping to it without an issue.
Do you know what quality of video?
Offhand at the moment, no.
I'm going to guess not 4K, but either 720 or 1080 probably.
I'm pretty sure it was a 1080p. I would definitely have to, you know, I didn't make notes of that. But I'm real sure it was 1080p.
Right. Well, really quick, LVM stands for Logical Volume Manager.
Right.
That's one of its use cases. The thing that LVM can do as well, you can literally have it in like an enterprise type solution where you can have a huge array of, let's just say, petabytes of data. And what it can do is it can allow you to carve and chunk up the huge amount, treat it as one huge amount, carve it into individual chunks and say, okay, UVM get this, UVM get that. And then you can dynamically expand and shrink those same volumes on demand kind of thing. So you could use that, or you could just use JBOD, just a bunch of disk. But I do believe you will get better performance with LVM and any future functionality that you might need. There's tons more of it in LVM versus JBOD. JBOD is if you really honestly, I don't want to say don't care, but you just want a bunch of disk to act like one disk and you never want anything else out of it.
Right. So the LVM is pretty cool. There are a number of different things you can do with it. Like you said, you could divide it up into many different disks. You can add more disk space to it at a later time. You can shrink it. You can remove disks from it. So it's a little bit of an abstraction of the hardware layer of the disk, and it kind of makes it, I believe it's what's underneath VMware when they have the vSAN, what they call the virtual storage area network. It sounds to me like it's basically VMware, you know, put their branding on LVM and calls it vSAN.
Yeah, and I'll say here's another, to me, excellent reason to use LVM. Even if you literally only have one disk, okay? Literally, if you only have a hypothetically 1 4-terabyte disk, but you want it to be rock solid and stable and last, quote unquote, forever, you can basically LVM the disk, being 4-terabyte disk, but say present it only as a 2-terabyte disk. What that then gives you, it gives you 2 full terabytes of throwaway clusters and sectors, so you could have the disk literally half fail, and your actual operating system and actual system will never know the difference. It will think it has been an unbelievably rock solid disk from day one, where hypothetically you could have a 4-terabyte disk last an easy decade.
Oh, I never thought about that. That's pretty cool.
Well, there were two enterprise guys I know where what they did was they had their vSANs of multiple petabytes, and they purposely lied to everybody and said there was 20% less available disk space. And here's how they did it. He was taught, they were both talking to people who were semi-tech literate. And he said, well, you know how when you go buy a drive from a store and it says 500 gigs, you connect to your computer, it's never 500 gigs.
Right.
That's the reason. And so he just buffaloed them all. So he had basically extra 20% slack space, to where he said he went for, like, the last guy he said he did, it was like 2 or 3 years ago. And after checking it, he said there was virtually no degradation in disk speed, disk performance, or disk size, where with every other type of sand over time, he said, if you closely look at it, you'll see it slowly getting smaller and smaller.
Oh, that is really interesting. So my problem with this is, like, right now you can buy an 8 terabyte drive. I got my last 8 terabyte drive on sale for like $129 and get them $169. So the question is, power consumption, heat, and noise, is it worth doing this? Or is it just kind of a fun exercise?
Well, it's worth doing it, but it's the kind of thing, I don't know if you saw it, in the last week and a half, there have been 1 terabyte NVMe drives on sale for $78. So I would say right now, today, it's probably worth doing it. But every day you don't do it, you lose a little bit of, the reason to do it is what I'll say.
Yeah, really good drives are getting cheaper and cheaper all the time.
Yeah, storage. I am really happy to see storage performance not going down as fast as prices. And the quality of drive seems to be sameish for the last 2, 3 years. I've paid attention to, I want to say it was Rackspace and the other one released hard drive stats, and they really haven't gotten much worse in the last couple of years. ECC is going crazy on all the drives, but that's what happens when you have, a 4 terabyte disk.
Who are the guys that do the online storage where they were shucking drives? Not Rackspace.
Wasn't Rackspace, wasn't Cloudflare, wasn't
Is it
Carbonite.
Backblaze or?
I think it was Backblaze. Yeah, they were basically buying portable external drives and literally cracking the case, pulling the hard drive out, and putting it in their infrastructure because it saved them money.
And if I got this right, they yeah, so I see 2018 hard drive reliability stats manufactured, blah blah blah, Backblaze. They also have their storage racks open source. So you can download the spec for how they do their storage and build it yourself if you wanted.
Yeah, there's only a couple cloud storage companies that seem to be surviving and doing good. Backblaze is definitely one of them.
Yeah, I'm still sore about Code 42 crash plane.
I will. They were a great company while they lasted. But sadly, everything must come to an end, including the Mini PC Show, episode 94, Rich. That was my attempt at a transition. If people want to catch up with you, what's the best way?
Any at your nearest jail, you'll probably find a wanted picture, at least what cell I'm in. Flyingrich.com. There's a contact me. You can see all of my social media, what I've been up to. This is one of the two podcasts I do on a regular basis. You can see the other podcast there. And just you can always drop me a line, say hi, or boy, I thought that was dumb what you said.
Gotcha. I want to thank everyone for coming out live. Red, Swift, Brian, and SCJ, thank you guys for coming out live. I'm trying my best to pay attention to the live chat. I'm not the best at it. If you want to support us on Patreon, do not forget, go to the link in the show. You can join our Patreon. And I'll say once again, any day now, I'm going to flick the switch and start accepting money from Patreon because in about 72 days, TechCon Unplugged is going to happen up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I have most of it booked. It's not completely done yet, but it's going to all be booked here shortly for you to go down there. We have more than a couple emails. Most of them we did discuss at least tangentially because they were links we already had in here. Half of the emails came from Joel from Tilts. And I no doubt if you listen to episode of the Linux Link Tech Show for July 10th, he definitely had Raspberry Pi stuff to talk about. I think there was at least one other email. I just couldn't find it in time. But if you want to send us an email, you can either go to podnuts.com, click on contact, or minipc at podnuts.com. Again, I want to thank everyone for coming out. Thank everyone for all the support, and we will talk to everyone again real soon.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network. And we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.